This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. For many of us, airline travel has become an exercise in confusion. Ticket prices keep changing, and you may be shut out of the low fare that you're eligible for. Airlines have gone broke, others are threatening to, and in the meantime, the new no-frills airlines seem to be changing some of the rules of the game. Jim Glab is a journalist who covers the travel industry. He's the author of a new book about the airlines after deregulation called Rapid Descent. I asked him why there are so many different fares for each flight and why the price depends on how far ahead you book and whether you stay over Saturday night.
Well, this is something that developed out of deregulation. The airlines invented a new science called yield management or capacity management. And essentially, it allows them to constantly juggle and rejuggle the mix of fares that are available on a given flight with the goal of selling the most seats at the highest possible fares. So if they see that a flight is booking up pretty well in advance of what they had expected, they can offer fewer discount seats on it and expect to sell the remaining seats at higher fares. If a flight is selling more slowly than they had anticipated, they can open up more seats with discount fares in an effort to fill up those seats.
It seems that people who really get clipped on the major airlines are business people who just find out Tuesday that they have to fly someplace on Thursday and they're not staying over Saturday night, and boy, do they have to pay high rates.
Well, that's certainly true, and that's just part of the whole commodity pricing structure that we've been talking about. The fact is that airline seats are perishable, and as the departure date approaches, if you need to travel and you still can't meet the requirements for the discount fares, you have to pay that higher fare. Their ultimate object is to, like I said before, get as much as they can for every seat on the plane.
Now, is this working for the airlines, the system?
Well, it has worked at times in the past, and at other times it has worked less successfully. I think right now the airlines are struggling with ways to adjust their pricing to compete effectively against a lot of these new low-fare airlines that have started up and are offering low fares on every seat with no purchase restrictions.
Why are we seeing this proliferation now of no-frill, cut-rate airlines?
Well, partly because the industry went through a period of significant consolidation during the mid to late 1980s, resulting in, you know, a few big airlines controlling the bulk of the market. And that created some opportunities for new competitors to come in and try to undercut them. Also, we have a situation in the industry where there are a lot of airplanes available at fairly low lease rates because there is so much surplus capacity in the industry. Some of the big airlines have been grounding their planes or turning them back to the leasing companies. We also have a surplus of experienced airline employees who lost their jobs when companies like Eastern and Pan Am went out of business. So given the opportunity for new competition and given the availability of relatively inexpensive aircraft and personnel, it's the perfect time for a new entrants to come into the industry.
So are the big airlines worried?
Oh, I think they're worried, sure, especially not so much by the smaller recently formed airlines like ValueJet and Kiwi. They're still too small to be much of a factor. I think the big airlines are more worried by people like Southwest Airlines, which has been expanding significantly in recent years, and last year was the only major airline to make a profit, and also by operations like the new Continental Light, the short-haul, low-fare service that Continental Airlines has been starting up and expanding in the eastern third of the United States.
So what moves do you see the older major airlines making to stay competitive with these newer ones?
Right now, airlines like United, Delta, and American are desperate to reduce their own operating costs so that they can compete effectively against these lower-cost airlines. United has taken the approach of turning over a large part of the company to the employees in exchange for substantial wage concessions. And if that is approved by shareholders, I think it's due for a vote next month, they plan to start up a low-fare, short-haul division of United called U2, although it will have a new name eventually, operating much like Southwest or much like Continental Light with fast turnaround service, low fares, and all 737 fleet, that kind of thing. Meanwhile, American and Delta are looking for ways. They have not taken that option of trying to start up a low-cost airline within an airline like United is, but they're looking for ways to come to terms with their employees for overall lower wage costs and higher productivity so that they can get their total operating costs down to the level of a Southwest or a Continental.
What is fast turnaround service?
Well, that simply means that when the plane comes into the gate, it will depart again in a relatively short period of time, maybe 30 to 45 minutes instead of 60 to 90 minutes, as might have been traditional in earlier years.
And that saves money?
Well, that saves money because they can increase the productivity of that aircraft. They can have the plane in the air more hours of the day. And there's an old adage in the airline business that a plane doesn't make any money unless it's in the air.
What advice do you have for plane travelers this summer about how to shop for the best rates?
Well, I think probably the smartest thing to do would be to go to a good travel agent, because most travel agencies nowadays have very sophisticated computer systems that can search across all of the airlines to find the best fare that applies to the particular circumstances of that individual, you know, depending on what kind of restrictions they can put up with, when they want to travel, what airports they want to leave from and arrive in, that kind of thing. It's incredibly complicated, and trying to shop around by yourself, you know, calling individual airlines on the telephone can be a very frustrating experience.
My guest is Jim Glab. He's the co-author of a book about the airlines called Rapid Descent. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jim Glab, and he's co-author of a new book about the airline industry called Rapid Descent. I'm interested in the frequent flyer programs. You know, for those of us who are enrolled in one or more of these programs, we're all bracing ourselves for the number of miles that you need to get a free ticket to go up, and I think it's January, and at least two of the airlines going up from 20,000 to 25,000. It seems to me the airlines kind of figured out that a lot of people were eligible for free tickets, and they decided they needed to up the ante.
Yeah,
is that what happened?
What you're seeing with the frequent flyer programs is essentially inflation, just like you see in an economy, except the currency is miles instead of dollars. The fact is that the amount of miles in the bank, so to speak, has been increasing geometrically for several years now for a couple of reasons. And number one, more and more people are joining these programs. They're adding thousands of new members every month. And number two, the airlines have been creating a lot of new ways to earn miles other than actually flying on that airline itself. They have affinity credit cards now so that you can earn miles based on the dollars you spend on the credit card. They have tie-ins with other kinds of travel companies so that you can earn miles for staying in certain hotel chains. And they have tie-ins now with the major long-distance companies so you can earn miles based on your residential phone bills. So with all this activity, we're seeing a big increase in the number of unclaimed miles that are building up, and this is reflected as a liability on the airline's balance sheets, and they want to obviously try to limit that as much as they can, so they're just bringing the cost of a free ticket up to keep everything in balance.
What's in it for the airlines to have the frequent flyer programs?
Customer loyalty. They've found over the years that these programs have been extremely successful in building a loyal customer base. And it also gives them a very effective way to communicate with their best customers, because they do send out, you know, mailings to their program members from time to time, telling them about all kinds of developments within the airline and special bonuses and deals that are available to them.
So are the airlines making money on the frequent flyer programs?
Well, that's a good question. Some airlines insist that they are, that they do in fact bring in more revenue from incremental business and from payments from their partner companies than they cost to operate. Other analysts in the industry claim that they're a big loss factor for the airlines and they'd be better off without them. So the truth probably lies somewhere in between. Some analysts say that it's essentially a zero-sum game.
What do you think with the fares coming down at some airlines because of the competition from the new no-frills airlines? Do you think the frequent flyer programs will remain in place?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there are very many observers out there who think that the airlines are going to get rid of the frequent flyer programs anytime soon. There is a movement afoot in the corporate community. About 15 large corporations have formed an organization and hired a consultant to bargain with the airlines for new ways of pricing tickets for these companies and their business travelers. What they're looking for, essentially, is lower fares from the airlines for their travelers, and in exchange, they say the airlines should no longer give their employees frequent flyer miles, nor should the airlines pay commissions to their travel agencies. Now, whether that proposal is ever going to get off the ground really remains to be seen. It's subject to Justice Department review before it goes to the airlines, and then once it goes to the airlines, I think they'll be very... It's very questionable whether they might want to adopt that. Earlier this year, IBM approached some of the major airlines with a similar idea of foregoing frequent flyer miles for its employees in exchange for discount fares, and the airlines rejected that proposal.
There's a lot of places where I've had to get to in the past few years where I have to take connecting flights. And that's because of what's called the hub system. You go to one city and then you take a flight to the smaller city. And is it true that there's more connecting flights now than there used to be?
Yeah, studies have shown that you do have a greater number of options to choose from if you're trying to get from point A to point B, although for the most part they do involve going through a hub. The hub-and-spoke systems evolved after deregulation or around the time of deregulation because the airlines saw that they offered a significant benefit in terms of passenger retention, that is, keeping the passenger on their airline for the entire duration of his flight. Before deregulation, we used to see a lot more what was called interlining, where passengers would take one airline to point A and transfer to another airline to go to point B. That has been significantly reduced by the creation of these hub-and-spoke systems. So you're much more likely now to stay on one airline for the full course of your journey than you were before.
I've had a couple of flights in the past year where I took a big jet to a hub city like Boston and then a little prop plane mm-hmm. from, say, Boston to a smaller city in Maine. Some of these prop planes are strike me as being pretty old. And I'm wondering if their existence is because of the hub system or if they're being... I'm wondering, too, if they're being used past the age that they should be.
Well, they're being used to smaller cities out of the hubs for a matter of simple economics. I mean, there simply is not... there aren't enough passengers in some of these cities to justify putting a larger aircraft into those markets. So they use the smaller planes simply because they don't have many passengers and because that way they can offer more frequency of service in and out of the hub.
Mm-hmm.
As for the safety angle, I believe the federal government is currently looking into... a lot of the safety regulations as far as commuter and regional airlines are affected with a view toward perhaps upgrading them so they're more on a par with the regulations that the major airlines have to abide by. And, of course, the question of aging aircraft is something that's always around. It's true, I don't know about the commuter aircraft, but I know among the major airlines it's true that the average age of aircraft has tended to increase over the last decade, although that's starting to turn around now because... all of the airlines have to be equipped with what are known as Stage 3 aircraft, that is a quiet aircraft, by the end of this decade. So you're seeing a lot of new planes coming online now and in the next few years.
What are some of your frustrations as a flyer?
Well, one frustration I do have is, and this may be a personal peeve, but carry-on baggage is a frustration that I run into a lot, especially on full airplanes when... people try to board before the row number is called simply so that they can get their bags into that overhead bin before it fills up. And if you can't, and you can't fit it under the seat, then you have to check it, then you have to wait to get it when the plane gets there, and it's a big hassle. And it's going to be getting tougher in the future because some airlines I know of are going to be enforcing the carry-on baggage rules more strictly.
Why?
Well, simply so that they can implement these fast turnaround services. It seems that a major element in flight delays is carry-on baggage. The fact that people come on board at the last minute with a bag that won't fit anywhere because everything is full, and the flight attendants have to try to encourage him to check it, and he'll want to check every overhead bin before he'll do that, and that can delay the flight departure.
Do you usually worry about safety when you fly, or are you confident?
No, I don't worry about safety at all.
Mm-hmm.
The statistics just aren't there to create any significant element of risk as far as I'm concerned.
Have you flown on the no-frill airlines yet?
Yeah, I flew on Kiwi International not too long ago.
What's different about it?
Well, for one thing, the walk-up fare, the fare that you get on the same day of departure, was pretty low. You know, the major airlines that compete against it will tend to match those fares, but only... on their flights that depart at about the same time as Kiwi flights depart. The aircraft itself was a little worn around the edges maybe, but the service was fine, and the attitude of the employees was really quite refreshing, I think probably because they all own part of the airline. I think that can make a big difference in the quality of service that you get from airline employees.
The employees are shareholders?
Yes, and... we've seen instances in the past, in the 1980s, when there was a lot of labor turmoil in the industry, that having an unhappy workforce at an airline can cost you a lot of business because one surly remark from an airline employee can send a passenger away from that airline for the rest of his life.
So many more people seem to be flying nowadays. Why are so many of the major airlines having so much trouble making a profit and even staying in business?
Well, the major airlines, after this round of consolidation that I mentioned, were in fact making pretty good profits in the late 1980s. The problems came in 1990-91 when they got hit by a real double whammy. Number one was the recession, which was beginning about then. Number two was the Gulf War. The Gulf War scared a lot of people out of the skies, not only on international flights, but even on domestic. Airline traffic took a real nosedive around that time. And then with the recession kicking in and businesses cutting down on their business travel, the major airlines found that they had a lot more planes in the air than they could justify based on the number of people that were traveling. So it was basically a simple supply and demand equation that was turning against the airlines in the early 90s.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jim Glab is the author of Rapid Descent. This is Fresh Air.